We're on lunch hour, talking about what you want to be talking about. Light fare.
With a serious spin, whether it be sports, faith, parenting.
Balance, relationships, education, community, coaching.
Starting over. How do you reboot yourself?
Ministry, relevant, resonant, and real.
Whatever it is, we want to talk about it.
Call in, ask us questions, be anonymous.
Senior moments.
What would you tell your teenage self?
Whatever it is, join us on Wednesdays.
Wildin' Out Wednesdays?
Absolutely.
Join us. I'm Jackie.
I'm Karen.
Write it down. 1450 AM, WOL.
Noon to 1.
Hey, Jack, how you doing? Welcome to Conversations, everybody. How you doing?
I am good, Karen. How are you doing today?
Good, good.
Look, now, it's noon where you are.
Yeah.
At 9 o'clock. It is 9 o'clock in the morning in California.
I know. I appreciate you, girl.
I was like, now I'm thinking, okay, so we're going to really do this show, so I'm going to get up early. I'm going to do what I have to do. I'm going to make my way downstairs. I was like, whoo, 9 o'clock on the West Coast. Man,
I know. Now we know how our guests feel when they're calling in that early.
Believe me, I empathize with them, and I thank our West Coast guests who join us this hour.
Jackie, I have not shared this with you, but you know, I am like 2 seconds from getting a CNI dog because, of course, I'm on crutches again, right?
Oh my God, Karen.
I'm like, I can't stay on my feet.
Y'all need to pray for my co-host.
I'm telling you. This is just ridiculous. Goodness.
We're going to get you those little blinders that they put on the horse.
Exactly.
So that way all you see, Karen, is what's in front of you.
Exactly.
I don't want you looking to the left or to the right. I just want you to look forward and look down.
Exactly.
And you might need to look up so you don't bump your little head.
Exactly, because here we go again. I'm like, this is just crazy. But anyway, it's all good. It's all good. You know what? I was intrigued, and I really appreciated what Pat said when she closed out her show. Inaction is an action. And
absolutely.
And that's what we've been talking about since inception, that, you know, we talk about voting, the importance of that, the importance of being involved, just the importance of staying connected. And when you have, I know we have guests that are really going to speak to us about a number of those things, particularly Leslie Baskerville. I'm really excited that she's going to join us today. But when you talk about HBCUs and their importance and how, you know, in a very real way, they're under assault financially, you know, it has to create some kind of movement to understand the significance of our universities.
Oh, absolutely. And it makes a big difference. I'm here in L.A. with Roland and News One Now, and they are doing their Black Hollywood segment as we roll into getting ready for the Image Awards that are going to be aired on TV One on this weekend.
Right.
And a lot of that communication and conversation is about the value and importance of a college education. Regardless of the career that you pursue, you have to know all aspects of your business in order to be successful. And going to college provides you with that avenue, whether it's a 2-year school or a 4-year school or a trade craft school. You've got to take the opportunity to educate yourself about your field.
That's right. That's right. It's vitally and it's critically important because when you have, you know, our young people seeing sports and entertainers, and they just see in a very real time the end of the journey or the proclamation of the journey and not the journey itself. They don't see the work that's done behind the scenes. They don't see them going to school and studying in school as well as studying their craft, the sacrifices that their parents and families have made in order to push them and excel them to do and fulfill their own dreams. It's critically important, particularly in minority communities, to understand that, in fact, it does still take a village. It's the village of not just your core family, but your extended family. You get a lot of that from our HBCUs.
Oh, absolutely, because I know being in college, and, you know, we talked to students, and then last week we had one of our graduate students on, Corey Briscoe, an advocate for education as well as a political strategist, and just watching young people, you know, right there at Howard University, at Morgan State, at the other colleges and institutions that are around the country, you know, find their voice.
Right.
And talk about how education plays a very big part in their being able to not only find employment, but being able to you know, maintain that level of employment, because the expectation after you get the job doesn't decrease, it increases.
That's right. That's
so you've got to, you know, use your financial aid advisor. You've got to use the social network at your campus of all the people who are in student services. So that community of colleges, you know, that is our village. When you're, you know, 19, 20, 21, 22, up to probably 25, 26 now, because many students are on the five-year plan.
That's right. That's
not
right.
Because they're not academically smart, but because the finances are not there.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for them to be able to get in and get out, they've got to stay longer and take half-time, you know, courses.
Exactly. And that's one of the beauties of NAFEO, the National Association for Equal Opportunity in Higher Education, and that they were there, they've been there in the trenches literally forever.
Oh, absolutely.
Talking about our HBCUs, promoting our HBCUs, championing our HBCUs and our predominantly black institutions. And go ahead. Did you ask?
No, I was going to interject when you mm-hmm. were done that, you know, I was introduced to NAFEO when I was vice president and dean at Kennedy King College in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And two of those institutions within the seven city colleges, Olive Harvey College as well as Kennedy King College, are what are considered PBIs, predominantly black institutions.
Right.
And the money that has to be set aside in order to secure sufficient funding for adequate programming
mm-hmm.
for students to be successful, because the level of wraparound services
mm-hmm.
that have to go onto those campuses is tremendous, you know, in the sense of reading labs and writing labs and science labs, you know, all of those things, and the presidential work that they do, Leslie Baskerville, and working with the president
mm-hmm.
of our HBCUs and PBIs is critical, because who we hire,
yes,
you know, in those institutions plays a very big part on its sustainability as a whole,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, you never want to see an HBCU close.
Right.
And we've, you know, seen that for many reasons, alumni not giving back, and that's a whole other, you know, segmented conversation about the role of HBCU alumni
mm-hmm.
and the role that they can play just by giving a dollar a month.
Mm-hmm.
If the number of graduates from HBCUs gave a dollar a month, they could sustain the institution on its own.
On its own.
Alumni giving.
Exactly. Even and if you want a dollar is nothing. Just think of it as giving up a cup of Starbucks. You know,
that's a couple of dollars.
That's a couple of dollars.
Giving up your Starbucks, that's a couple of dollars.
Exactly.
Right there, your grand latte.
But,
you
but
keep a kid in college and the institution open. You know
exactly, exactly. And if everybody did it, I didn't have the luxury of going to an HBCU, but my sister did it, and one of my aunts was the president of Chicago State, actually. And one of the things that I appreciated about their experience versus my own is a different camaraderie that comes out of it. And even though they didn't, neither of them pledged anything, there's still a different environment with their peers, how they still keep in touch, how they still get together when they come mm-hmm. back for homecoming and things of that nature. So I'm talking of the social aspect of it, is that helps you later on professionally, because you never know where you're going to wind up and what your network may be to start off with when you're relocating to a new city or a new job.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely, because the aspirations of students that go to HBCUs are high.
Yeah.
And we see them in all sectors of business, from school teachers to lawyers, doctors, government officials, and some young student will want to, you know, it's not the riding the coattail mm-hmm. of an alumni. It is seeking the hand that can give you access
right.
to, you know, those various venues in which you may want to find yourself. So despite the foolishness that's highlighted on television,
mm-hmm.
parents should not shy away from looking into HBCU education for their children.
Right.
I mean, even with, you know, talking about the social aspects, you remember when the movie School Days came out?
Mm-hmm.
That movie was diametrically opposed to higher learning, where you had students at HBCUs looking for the cultural things that they needed in order to be considered whole and healthy and happy. And then the students who were in the movie Higher Learning, how that was definitely opposite because of the level of mistrust among the diversity that existed with students that did not, you know, come from a background where they saw people of different races and ethnicities on an ongoing basis. And so there's value to create that balance there. And, you know, for students that are listening who are thinking about going to grad school, if you didn't go to an HBCU as an undergrad, do yourself a favor and consider an HBCU for grad school, because the work they do is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
It's crazy the work that they do and the consistency of work. And nurturing of the student as well, because some folks can't handle being away, so to speak, even whether you're on a graduate level or an undergraduate level. But the beauty of our HBCUs is that they create that environment where you know.
I'm away from home.
That's right. Exactly. Where you know that somebody's got your back to succeed. And that's vitally important. We're going to be joined now, Jackie, by Dr. Leslie Baskerville, who is the head of NAFIO. Hey, Leslie, how you doing?
I'm so well, and thank you so very much for having me on today.
It's our pleasure. I'm excited, Leslie, for a couple of reasons, but one, this is 2 weeks in a row, Jackie, where we've had New Jersey natives on.
So, you're on a roll, and you know you have great people.
Exactly.
So, girl on the line.
Exactly. So, Jackie, you got to bring in them in Texas next time. So,
yeah. Find some people down south.
But anyway, Leslie, we appreciate you joining us. Can you share with our listeners, for who may not be familiar, Jackie and I have given a little bit of an introduction, but about NAFIO, its work and its presence on the higher education front?
Sure. NAFIO is the nation's only umbrella organization of all of the HBCUs, the 105 richly diverse public, private, two-year, four-year land-grant institutions, as well as now 75 predominantly black institutions. So our institutions are in 35 states, including New Jersey. We've got two predominantly black institutions in Jersey. We've got Essex County College and Bloomfield College. But 35 states, the District of Columbia, Virgin Islands, and NAFIO serves as a voice for blacks in higher education, whether they've gone to an HBCU or not. But our primary focus is on telling the remarkable story about HBCUs, certainly their past, but the vital need for HBCUs today. They're just 3% of America's colleges and universities, but they're graduating today 60% of African-American health professionals, 50% of African-American teachers, 40% of African-Americans in the sciences, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And so we are here to tell the story about these remarkable institutions, without which our nation will never realize its potential to have a richly diverse, excellent workforce, will never realize our ability to reach our economic and our global goals without them.
We had a gentleman on last week who called in, Dr. E, I believe it was, who is one of the few physicists, African-American physicists. He retired from NASA. And one of the things that he said that really resonated was that, you know, we don't see enough of African-Americans and people of color in the science and technologies. And one of the things that I appreciate about you saying about NAFIO is that you and the universities are encouraged that you have 40% graduation in those fields. But I'm wondering, we're hitting up on a hard break, but I'm wondering, perhaps we can give some thought to how do we, or how does NAFIO assist, if it does, in getting our young people engaged in the sciences and technologies and mathematics, because, you know, given our society and the globalization of it, it's important, and we don't want to be left behind. We want to continue to be out front.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that. Do we have a moment to get started on it now, or do we need to stop right now? Because we're doing numbers of things, both in terms of the pipeline So we work with such groups as Susan Taylor's Mentoring Cares Network, where we worked with them to get a STEM grant so that they're working with students, as you know, through middle school, high school, and into colleges and universities, exciting students about the sciences and technology using not only today's social media, but music and literature, the arts, and other ways of connecting with middle school students and high school students in the manner in which they connect, exciting them about the sciences and technology. We also work with the Children's Defense Fund Freedom Schools.
Well, let's hold it right there then, because okay. So we don't lose the point on that. And we'll come back and on the other side of the break and talk about the Freedom School. This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. Back on with Conversation with Jackie and Karen. Our guest is Dr. Leslie Baskerville, who is the president of NAFIO, the National Association for Equal Opportunity in Higher Education. Go ahead, Leslie. You want to continue with what the work that's being done with NAFIO and other organizations about science, technology, and mathematics?
Yeah. So, and the question that you asked was an important one about how do we energize and excite students about the sciences, technology, engineering, and mathematics, which we call STEM, at an early age to get them to prepare in elementary and secondary schools, high schools, to want to go into college and university in the sciences. I mentioned that we're working with Susan Taylor's Mentoring Cares Network around the country with middle school, high school students going into STEM. And we're also working with the Children's Defense Fund program, which are Freedom Schools. Freedom Schools are programs, they're after-school programs and summer programs that provide academic enrichment, but also civic, political, cultural enrichment for students. And as we're seeking to get more, and these are for low-income students around the country, as we're seeking to get more low-income students, but especially African-American students, Latino students, the growing student populations, to think about sciences and technologies, the Freedom Schools are doing that as well. And NAFIO HBCUs, a couple of our HBCUs have Freedom Schools. They're associated with Freedom Schools. And NAFIO, one of NAFIO's goals this year is to increase by 5 the number of Freedom Schools that HBCUs have each year. What they do is permit our aspiring teachers who are at the point of, teachers who are preparing to be teachers, who are at the point of needing to go out and work in the community, work in schools, give them a tremendous opportunity to apply the best practices of today in teaching and preparing students, especially African-American students, to use those gifts and talents with the students in the Freedom Schools. And again, there's a focus on STEM. At another level, NAFIO is working with the Department of Energy. This year, the Department of Energy, under Secretary Moniz and Dot Harris, as well as Annie Watley, who are African-American women, who talked with Secretary Moniz about a vision for having a minorities in energy dialogue. How do we get more African-Americans, Latinos, Asian Pacific Islanders, and Native Americans to aspire to go into energy and STEM? Energy, of course, is a growing discipline. So we had a year-long discussion, but NAFIO is chairing their education task force. So we're going around the country. We had a congressional hearing. We had a White House, a day-long activity at the White House, where we brought together persons in energy, big business in energy, small and disadvantaged persons in energy. We brought together policymakers, policy shapers, and a range of folks to talk about how do we create more opportunities for minorities in energy. The role of the education work group is to talk about how we prepare, inspire, and connect more traditionally underrepresented minorities to energy. So HACU, the Hispanic Association of Colleges and Universities, AHEC, American Indian Higher Ed Coalition, and APIACU, the Asian Pacific Islanders Higher Education Coalition, joined with NAFIO in thinking through how do we pipeline, how do we partner in school districts beginning with early childhood education and excite and energize people? How do we shift resources to that? And we have a blueprint that the Department of Energy is going to implement beginning over this year and carry it out for the next several years. And then finally, in terms of preparation, NAFIO is working with the United States Department of Agriculture's Natural Resources and Conservation Services. They, too, are concerned about the absence of black and brown people, professionals and students in the pipeline to become our leading scientists, conservationists, people in natural resources, water filtration, and so forth. And so we have a partnership with them where we are going to HBCU campuses. We've been to 5 so far. We're about to go to another 4. We're meeting with students. We're meeting with professors, because part of this is making certain that the needs in industry and the needs in the Department of Agriculture and other government agencies are aligned with what is being taught in our classrooms at HBCU. So we're excited about that partnership as well, and it has yielded a number of new students who are now preparing for and looking forward to working in conservation and natural resources in the sciences.
That's
so those are a couple of things that we're doing.
Yeah, and that's impressive and extensive. And one of the things, it brought to remembrance, Jackie, I think we talked about it a while back, but I know even at some majority schools, for example, the University of South Florida, they are looking specifically for minorities who are interested in marine biology, and they're offering them full and partial scholarships because they don't have enough. And it reminds me, Dr. Baskerville, that I'll probably connect you all offline, because there might be something that can be accomplished down the road, since you're encouraging the sciences anyway. But I'm writing myself a note to make sure that I do that after we get offline.
Simultaneously, we look forward to partnering and to trying to get our students to take advantage of every opportunity. In fact, some of our strongest partnerships involve our students who are enrolled at an HBCU going to engage in research opportunities during the break, during summer, and other times at major research institutions if theirs is not, and taking advantage of such things as a marine biology course.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the good things is, and one of the things that I have to say is that the top 10 baccalaureate institutions for blacks in sciences and engineering and those receiving doctorates are HBCUs.
All right.
So, Howard University, Spelman College, FAMU, Xavier. When you talked about the physicist, I don't know if he went to Xavier, but a guesstimate might be that he went to Xavier. Hampton University, Morehouse College, Morgan State University, North Carolina A&T, Southern University, A&M College are all in the top 10 producers. So any student who wants to be prepared in a smaller nurturing environment with caring, exemplary professionals in sciences and engineering would serve themselves well to consider Howard, Spelman, Florida, A&M, Xavier, Hampton. Morehouse is the test now, right? Morgan State, North Carolina, A&T, Southern University, and others. There are many others, but those are in the top 10 producers.
Wow.
So we want all students who want to be scientists and engineers to consider those institutions, as well as others of our HBCUs that are having tremendous returns in those areas.
Oh, absolutely. And I think a lot of it, Dr. Baskerville, begins with exposure. So many students wait until they get to high school before they start considering the possibility of not only going to college, but what type of career they would like to have. And I think the value of the pipeline is the exposure that's provided to the students. to be able to see what colleges are out there. College tour in 7th and 8th grade is not an impossibility. And actually, it's probably a really good time so that when they're focusing their 9th through 11th grade years in high school on courses that really matter that will transfer into any of the HBCUs or PBIs.
You're absolutely right, and I'm so glad you mentioned college tours because I was talking with Reverend Yearwood, who's the president of the Hip Hop Caucus, and by passion, he's been in the sustainability, the science and technology, STEM areas for a long time, and he informed me that he's about to launch an HBCU campus tour for students so that they can see what the campuses look like, feel what they look like, but importantly, while they're there, they can be important parts of discussions about the importance of the sciences and sustainability, protecting our water, our air, our earth, preparing for those green jobs and the jobs that are the fastest growing, among the fastest growing jobs that we have. So Reverend Yearwood is going to be going in, and Nafio is going to be partnering with him. Nafio doesn't itself sponsor HBCU college tours, but there are so many of our partners that do, and we certainly connect our institutions with those partners who are undertaking the college tours. One thing we do, and I didn't talk about this, but today, the best practice in preparing students includes having a hands-on experience. So Nafio does have, we sponsor internships for students, second, third, fourth year undergraduate students, and fellowships for graduate students and faculty. We're working currently with about 15 of the federal agencies and 5 or 6 corporations to make sure that our students have experiential learning while they're going through the training so they know what it is like on the front lines of the disciplines in which they're interested.
And that makes perfectly good sense because from an administrative perspective, we often inspect what we expect. And if we never provide our students with that tangible, hands-on experience, they won't know the protocols of how to engage in dialogue using the proper vocabulary when interacting with professors and professionals, you know, at that particular level. We talk a lot about STEM. And I want to ask you a little bit, Dr. Baskerville, about the arts and the role that arts does or does not play now, because we hear a lot about STEM, but where's our STEAM? Many students of African-American descent and some of other cultures find the arts a way for them to learn math, to understand manufacturing. What are we doing with the arts and education at both the lower levels and higher ed?
So, two things. One, I love the inspect what we expect, and I'm going to give you credit for that and figure out how to put that in our brochure when we try and encourage students to sign up for internships. Relative to the theme, actually, Nafio has an initiative moving HBCUs full steam ahead. The A in that steam is agriculture. But let's call it the arts. We're going to call it the arts now and look at it because you raise a good point. As we have begun to emphasize science, technology, engineering, and the growth and high need disciplines, a question is frequently asked about, you know, what about the arts? We certainly know and believe that the arts are vitally important, as you indicate. The arts have been a way of doing two things, learning and teaching in mathematics. They've been a way of teaching in a wide range of disciplines, and I specifically referenced the use of the arts that Susan Taylor is doing with the Mentoring Cares Network, and which we're a partner and we fully embrace. But the arts also, it preserves the culture of the people, the culture and the ethos of who we are. And as your listeners know, HBCUs have some of the strongest curricula in arts, visual arts, a range of arts, performing arts, and we celebrate and support them. I was recently, just this week, visiting with the National Endowment for Humanity.
One second, Leslie. Can you hold on just one more break for us, please? Okay.
Sure.
All right. We'll be back on the other side with Conversation with Jack and Karen. We're back. This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. We're on with Dr. Leslie Baskerville, who is the president of NAFIA. You were talking, Leslie, about going to the National Humanities.
We were talking about the importance of the arts, and I'm just so glad that you steered me in that direction. But I was at the National Endowment for Humanities this week. As I indicated, so many of our campuses have artifacts and treasures, literature, manuscripts that have been preserved or need to be preserved. And then, of course, we've got today some of the leading students and faculty and staff in wide range of the arts. But I was there on behalf of Talladega College in Talladega, Alabama. Talladega owns the Amistad Mural. And I'm sure you and your listeners have heard about the Amistad murals depicting slavery revolts and so forth. And they're on tour around the country right now. They're going to end up in the Smithsonian, I think it is September, but early fall. But they've been touring. And when they go back to Talladega, it is the desire of the president to have a home worthy of the murals in which to house them. And President Billy Hawkins, who he's a phenomenal leader, marketer, talked to a number of people, but just recently he was able to get President Bill Harvey and Mrs. Norma Harvey. President Bill Harvey is the president of Hampton University that has a world-class museum. But President Harvey is from Alabama. I think he's from Brewton, Alabama, but he's connected with Talladega. And he and Mrs. Harvey agreed to make a donation of $1 million to Talladega College for a museum. And that will get this going in a remarkable way. And it is, in my opinion, reflective of the generosity and the love and caring that both President Harvey and Mrs. Harvey have for the entire HBCU community. But I was at the National Endowment for Humanities because they have a challenge grant program. And with that first $1 million, we were there to talk with them about what we needed to do to get a match and to raise roughly $3 million that it is anticipated it will take for the museum to house these the remarkable, valuable murals. And some of your listeners that are patrons of the arts might consider investing in and supporting Talladega as it tries to build this museum for the Amistad murals. But that is foremost on my mind because I just finished it.
I want
to make clear that so many of our colleges and universities are leaders in the arts.
And you know, I have to apologize.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I have to apologize for not asking a lot of questions because I'm just fascinated with the amount of work that NAFIA was doing, much of which, or quite a bit of what it, is new to me. With respect to how it has evolved over the years, to even expand its presence in the areas like, you know, science, technology, engineering, arts, mathematics, et cetera. It's just wonderful just listening to you just share it and run it off. I'm just fascinated. But can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with or find information about NAFIA?
Yes, please. And again, I want to thank you ever so much for affording me this forum, and thank you for the manner in which you use your forum daily to give this information to our listeners. Where can we reach? Our website is www.nafeo.org. And if anybody wants to reach me directly, they can reach me at my email address, which is lbaskerville, B-A-S-K-E-R-V-I-L-L-E, @nafeo.org. And our phone number, 202 952-3300, where Mr. Loach will be happy to receive the call and then steer it to the person who is over an area of interest. Our primary purpose is to serve as the voice for blacks in higher education, to advocate at the federal level, at the state level, at municipal level, on behalf of this broad and diverse group of colleges and universities. But it is also importantly to connect our members with resources to make sure that they're strong and that they're able to realize their mission.
Well, we want to thank you. I'm fascinated, Jackie. This has just been wonderful.
Yes, that's why I'm a member of NAFIO.
Exactly.
I was afforded 8 years ago now when I was at the City Colleges of Chicago. So it's been wonderful, and I look forward to continue being an advocate and working on behalf of NAFIO.
Thank you, Dr. Baskerville.
Well, thank you so very much. Thank you both. And again, thanks for all that you do.
We appreciate it. We appreciate
you. Have a glorious day.
Yes, you too.
Right, thank you.
We're going to be joined now by, I guess, one half or both halves of that show, Thicker Than Water, on Bravo. This is Jewel Tankard. Jewel?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
We are good. How are you?
Oh, we have both of you. Wonderful.
Hey.
Yes.
Oh, we have Ben and Jewel Tankard. All right.
We have the Tankards.
The Black Baby Bunch.
Yes, indeed. What an awesome opportunity to speak with the two of you.
Mm-hmm. So what's going on? Are you all, you know, we got through year one of the network of the show, and I guess you're coming back for year two. So what do you have to share with us?
Well, we are just enjoying the break, girl, because I don't know if you had an opportunity to witness reality TV, but you're talking about 16-hour days, 4 to 5 times a week for 4 months.
Exactly. 22
people in your house. So I'm just enjoying being able to sit down and watch your black and white cowboy
movie. I know.
I heard that. There you go. Now, where are you guys located?
We're in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, right outside of Nashville.
Okay, that's what I thought. I knew it was in the Tennessee area, and it's just beautiful. And I was trying to figure out specifically where you guys were. So I'm happy that you're getting a break. You know, being on hiatus for a few months or a few weeks?
It's a few months.
Wonderful.
Months, but we're not sitting down. You know, I've got 100 concerts to do, a book to write, and a church to pastor, and I'm still raising these grown juveniles.
Well, you guys are doing an amazing job. And for people who are listening, the part that comes before Thicker Than Water is blood.
That's right.
And clearly, blood is thicker than water. I think the titling of that show in itself speaks volumes to the family and community that exists within our village. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you came up with the name for the show and then why you agreed to do it?
Well, I have to give Bravo NBC credit for the name. They actually did this project about 7 years ago with an Italian family, and they just did a pilot, but they never went forward with it. But they wanted to use us because we represented a wealthy African-American family that wasn't afraid to show that even though, you know, God blesses you to live on the high end of the financial world, you still have issues. And even though you can be a minister, I'm a volunteer pastor at our church, even though you're a pastor doesn't mean your problems go away, and you still have issues just like anybody else. And because we live our life as an open book, we did not mind the cameras coming in so we could show folks, hey, we are a blended family, we saved, God has blessed us financially, we don't mind showing you all how we live and how we try to figure it out day by day with God's help. Because just because you think you graduate don't mean the problem started. Stop.
Mm-hmm. I'm very curious as to how you in particular, Ben, transitioned from basketball into music. Was music always your passion? Because you were instrumental in discovering Yolanda Adams, correct?
Yes, ma'am. And music was always my passion. I played drums in the band and played tuba in the band and was an All-American tuba player in high school.
Tuba?
Yes, ma'am. But I was 6 foot six by the time I was in the sixth grade, and I came from a poor family. So you know, my mother said, hey, you black, you tall, we're poor, play ball.
She had a formula.
And so being 6 foot six, you know, I was bouncing the basketball, but I had a song in my heart. That's my story, you know. So I graduated from high school, and I, instead of taking a tuba scholarship for music, which is what I wanted to do, I took the basketball scholarship in hopes of going on to go pro and being able to make some money and come back and bless my poor family. And I got to college. My family really went through, and I quit college early so I could go play in the minor league to be able to send money home to help my parents, help my folks. And in playing the minor league, I got called up to the NBA. I was in the CBA at the time in Canada, but I got called up to the Portland Trailblazers. And if I make it through this camp, I'm going to be the next guy off the bench behind Clyde the Glide Drexler. but there was another plan. I popped my knee and got hurt, and I was cut from the team, never was able to play a game. So that's how I got back to music. I went to church, got saved in this revival service one night, and the minister prayed for my hands and told me to sit down to the piano, which I had never played before. And when I put my hands on the keys, I began to play the first time like a professional jazz musician. And so that's why I named it gospel jazz, because I was in church when God gifted me, and he gives me this jazzy gift. And so I just started taking gospel songs and playing them in a jazzy style and started recording it. And 15 gold albums later, we're talking to you guys.
Mm-mm. Look at God. And Jewel, I know that you speak to women about the need for financial freedom and finding theirs within. Can you share a little bit about your story?
Hey, yeah. You know, I'm really passionate about it. I think being an African-American woman in America is a phenomenal opportunity, but there's still so many of us that don't understand and know the opportunities that have been afforded to us. I grew up in a home where my parents are both entrepreneurs. I come from a family of entrepreneurs. I'm actually a fourth-generation entrepreneur, and I saw my parents experience extreme success, but then I also experienced them and witnessed them watching, you know, dealing with extreme failure. And I remember during one of those times in our lives where I was asking my mom some questions. At this point, I was a freshman in college at Michigan State and ended up transferring to U of M and actually graduated from U of M, but and had an econ degree there, graduated Dean's List. But I remember asking my mom, like, okay, so what about this with the business? Or what about this with the business? Or, you know, I was asking her these financial questions. And, you know, so many things went back to, well, your father said, And I was like, okay, so you just turned over your entire financial future to Dad, who I love and respect, phenomenal businessman, but nobody can know everything about a business. And I think it's important for women to have a voice there, but a lot of times they don't have a voice because they don't know. And so therefore, they just kind of turn their whole lives over. And so I saw tons of, you know, couples like that and experiences like that. And it just made me really passionate to say, you know what, I will never be caught in a situation where I don't know the basics. I don't know where the money is, or is the money growing? Is the money moving? Are we going to be able to handle inflation? You know, just do we have insurance? Do you have insurance? What if this happens? What if that happens? So it caused me to become very inquisitive financially and went on to have a very successful business career. And so now, yeah, I have a Jewel Tankard Millionaires Club, which will be starting March 3rd. It'll be the first Monday of every single month for 6 months. For 2 hours, they can come and sit in the live studio with us, or they can get on the webinar and watch. And we'll be talking about everything from wealth profiling, how
we want to hear money. Yeah, we want to hear more about that on the other side of it. Hold on 1 second, okay?
Okay.
All right, we'll be right back. This is Conversations with Jackie and Karen. We're on with Ben and Jewel Tankard. Jackie, I was listening to the music. I thought we were still on break.
Karen over there grooving.
I sure was.
No, the music was actually good, though, because I was sitting here thinking about the entrepreneurial spirit that exists within the Tankard home. And I'm wondering, and I know that you started explaining and sharing with us, and I'd like for you to continue that vein of thought, but then also can you transition us into what do you tell young people how to take a chance at the opportunity when it presents itself? Because I think the wisdom that you share through your show, kids don't have parents who can tell them what you're doing with your kids. So if you could finish what you were talking about and then also share with us, if both of you could share a little bit about how do you leap at the opportunity and know that it's the right opportunity?
Yeah, that's great. That's great. You know, that's one of the things that we deal with in the Millionaires Club is learn to trust your instincts and learn to follow your instincts and then making sure that you surround yourself with people that are going to provoke you to change and challenge you to become better. You don't just need cheerleaders in your corner, but you need people that will challenge some of that thought process. And so that's what I would say to that. You know, so many parents, old school parents, will be all involved in their children's lives now. A lot of parents are their friends, and so I'm hoping that the show will kind of bring the parental involvement and ask the questions and do the guiding and give the direction, because even if children say they don't like it, they still need it.
Mm-hmm. And what I try to tell the kids is that people are in the comma business. I mean, people are in the period business, but God is in the comma business. You know, people will mm-hmm. say, oh, that's Brooklyn, the ex lounge owner, or that's Robert, the ex drug dealer, or that's Jimmy, the ex abuser, and put a period behind that. But God says, yes, they did that, but comma, mm-hmm. now they're a man of God, comma, businessman, comma. You know, so he adds the commas. And, you know, I started out being a basketball player, turned into a recording artist, but now I'm also a motivational speaker for the NBA. I'm a suit designer. You know, I'm a pilot. I rent out my airplanes when I'm not using them. You know, so now reality TV co-stars. So we try to tell our kids that don't limit yourself, but you got to keep trying. You know, I even had a pro basketball team that I brought to this city, and I thought I was going to bring pro basketball to the little city of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. So I bought a minor league team and spent $100,000 thinking I'm going to get all these folks out to the basketball game, and there was nobody there but me and my family. Mm-hmm. And so I think the key to success is failure. If 9 out of 25 businesses fail, then, you know, how many more you got to open before you do something? You got to keep busy. And that's what we tell them. Don't be afraid to step out and don't be afraid to fail.
And I think that's important because a lot of people get pigeonholed. They see you're only good at this, or you're only capable of doing that. Well, I only see you do this. But a lot of those onlys are really just stepping stones to something else. They're all teachable moments along a path to some greater journey that God has in store. So in dealing with that, because the show is so faith-based, and a lot of people don't talk about the value of faith in doing what they're pursuing, how does that act as a catalyst to keep you moving when things aren't going well?
It's power of vision. I believe if you have a vision and you set a vision inside and outside of the word, a vision works. I say this all the time. You know, a works will work without faith, but faith will not work without works. So people that never heard of God can be successful if they set a vision and keep with it. You know, I do over 100 concerts a year. I preach over 50 messages at the church a year. You know, I'm doing all these events and these different businesses. And I thought I was busy until I met somebody that owned 53 businesses. So guess what I do? I retire from being tired, because in my mind, I ain't doing nothing yet.
Wow. Now, that is a good philosophy. Yeah, we've heard this since we were kids. You can rest when you're dead, but while you're alive and kicking, you need to be about doing something.
Yeah, I'd like to say you can sleep in heaven.
Yes, sir.
Well, Jackie, let me ask you as well, too, because as the Tankards may know, you're also an ordained minister, but you always talk about, and I'm sure Ben and Jewel can speak to this as well, too, the three of you, about the importance of living a balanced life. I know, Jackie, you wrote the book Fulfilled on it, but perhaps the three of you now can share with our listeners just the importance of keeping everything in perspective.
Well, that's the key word on this end, is perspective. You can never let other people define for you, as Ben said, the vision that God has given you.
only you can walk out that vision. And when you have balance, it's the thing that's at the forefront, and you let everything else line up behind it. And caution about running ahead of God. You can see where you're going, but you don't know what is there as you're going. And it requires you to pace yourself and allow yourself to learn as you go so you don't get too far ahead of the one who's actually making the vision a reality. And that's, for me, where the balance comes in, because the coping skills have to be there. Everybody's not going to be ready when you're ready. People are not going to be on the same page when you want to be on that page. And you've got to have the coping skill to step back out of the situation and really look at it from a bigger view.
And I think that's Ben and Jude. That's what you do on your show. You really step back. You're the parents. You're the entrepreneurs. But you see it from the vision of it from a larger perspective.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things that we really try to stress to our children, that just because you may be famous with people doesn't necessarily mean you're famous in heaven. So make sure that you do not, get caught up with, oh, well, they love me, or they said, who is they? You know, we got to make sure that we're not being defined by Twitter or defined by Facebook, because what they may be saying is right could be totally wrong in the eyes of God. So you're right. You have to keep that perspective and make sure that you keep a circle of people around you that are not just a bunch of yes people. They're going to say yes because they're impressed with you. And so we have to be careful that, you know, just because God has given us this platform, that now we do still have a responsibility to manage it with humility and really just staying teachable, because you can get to a point where you feel like you know everything and really know nothing. So you're right. I think it's just that you have to make sure you keep first things first.
And when you're unselfish and you have a goal of everything you do, you tie it to helping people, then you will always be employed. Everything I do, I try to do it to where it's going to give someone else the advantage. We have given away 18 vehicles in our last few years because my goal is I want to be able to give away a car a week, because I went through not having a vehicle as a kid. My family didn't have a car. We walked everywhere. So I made a goal when I was a kid that when I get grown and get successful and get quote unquote rich, I'm going to make sure that I go back and provide for other people what I couldn't have as a kid. So I'm all about this transportation thing. Yes, I do own 7 cars, but I've just given away another car this past Sunday, which makes it number 19. But I'd like to be able to give away 52 a year. And so one of the reasons I took the job as reality was not that I needed another job, but I knew that by doing this reality show with Bravo NBC, it would create 150 jobs. It takes 150 people to make this show happen. So those people were employed because of me. That's one of the reasons I did it. So if you always look at helping somebody else, you will always be employed.
Well, and I agree with that 100%. There's a phrase that we say at our church in Houston, that God sends blessings to whom he can send blessings through. And I have seen the reality of that. Your heart has to be in the right place for everything that you do. And then with that, he gets glory and honor from the gifting that he gives to us.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, you know, because you're coming back this year last year, what I appreciated about the show was that the everything that you were saying today was evident. You know, it's going before you. You're speaking the truth as you understand it and know it to be for yourselves, and you're reflecting that in your household, and that's to be commended, because not everybody does that. They kind of comport and conform to, well, what do we think society's going to like? What do we think they're not going to like? And I appreciate you. I appreciate you for being on with us today, and we look forward to bigger and better things.
I honor God, and thank you guys for having us, and I honor God for even using Bravo NBC to give us this platform. And yes, they have to create a show. They have to make it entertaining. Yes, they take out what they don't want. And yes, they bring to the front the things that we might not have brought to the front early as they did. But at the bottom line, we have to give them credit for giving us the opportunity to be on national TV and talk about our faith and talk about God without any or restriction. Just be ourselves. And you have to give it to Bravo for allowing us to do that.
Yeah. Well, we thank them, and we thank you, too, for joining us today. It's been wonderful. We have to do this again. It's been wonderful just chatting with you. I wish we had more time.
Oh, absolutely. Now, tell our listeners quickly what time and what station for your show.
Well, Thicker Than Water, we had our season finale a couple weeks ago, but you can go on BravoTV.com and catch up on all the old episodes, or you can go to iTunes and Amazon or on demand to catch up on the whole season. We'll keep you breasted up to breast on what's coming up. Bravo wants they have to make all the announcements regarding the second season, so
okay.
We tighten up on that, but they will be contacting you all soon and give you all the details of what's coming next for the Tankers and Thicker Than Water.
We appreciate it. It's been great.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, ladies.
All right. You all have a good one.
Thank you.
This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. We'll catch you next time on Radio 1.
We're on Lunch Hour, talking about what you want to be talking about. Light Fare.
With a serious spin. Whether it be sports, faith, parenting.
Balance, relationships, education, community. Coaching.
Starting over. How do you reboot yourself?
Ministry. Relevant, resonant, and real.
Whatever it is, we want to talk about it.
Call in, ask us questions, be anonymous.
Senior moments.
What would you tell your teenage self?
Whatever it is, join us on Wednesdays.
Wildin' Out Wednesdays?
Absolutely.
Join us. I'm Jackie.
I'm Karen.
Write it down. 1450 AM WOL.
Noon to 1.